Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 78. This episode covers the Memorial Tournament on the PGA Tour and the Belgian knockout on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Preview at Golf Betting System, and with me we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Steve. How's things?
We're all right. Not too bad, thank you.
Good.
GolfBettingSystem.co.uk is our website. Naturally, we are available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. A link is available in the description box. We had loads of people joining that last week, Paul. Mm, yeah. And I don't know if that was the shout that we put out on the podcast, but just to revisit that, Golf Betting System Facebook group, we're coming up to almost 5,000.
Yeah, it's getting close. Just ticked over, yeah. 4,408, I think it was, over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, getting close to that 5,000 mark.
Yeah, like-minded golf punters, bettors, DraftKings players. So, very, very worthwhile you joining that if you're a Facebook member. I'm at Bamford Golf on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I've recorded those already today for both the Belgian knockout and for the Memorial Tournament. I will place links to those in the description box. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom, YouTube. You know the coup. Now, naturally, subscribe and follow the podcast. That is our currency. It's amazing how iTunes refers to the reviews and the ratings that you, the listeners, give. And we have seen a huge uplift in our positions over here in the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland. And that is due to you guys reviewing and rating us. So if you could take time to do that this week, of course, I will read your review out on the podcast next week. We have a review from last week. It is entitled An Essential Listen with 5 stars. It is from Ian A, who is in Great Britain. So, Ian, thank you for the time that you spent on this. He writes, "This podcast is unmissable. If you bet seriously on golf and don't have time for research or just want to hear other opinions and some in-depth analysis, these guys do it all for you and they do it properly." Ian, much appreciated. Thank you for your time and for your review.
Yeah, thanks, Ian.
Right, shall we review? Let's review what happened last week, shall we? Colonial Charles Fobb Challenge. He was everywhere, that Charles Fobb. Whenever I turned it on, he was standing there. I was surprised he weren't doing putting for some of them. In fact, he could have probably putted better than Francesco Molinari, to be fair to him. But
it didn't quite happen for Frankie, did it?
No, that was one of the points I was going to raise with you. He seems to, post Augusta, that's hit him hard, isn't it? And all of a sudden, he was hitting it to 4, 5, 6 feet on a lot of holes, a lot of par fives, and you're thinking that's a birdie, and then he'd miss the four-footer. Mm. And that's going back to Francesco, you know, pre-fantastic run last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I think it will come back. His approach game, his tee-to-green game is still in decent enough shape. It was just the putting's letting him down right now.
It's surprising because he has, if there's one part of his game that has stepped up to the next level for Francesco Molinari, it is his putting.
Yeah,
you know, we've always known how good he is from tee to green back from the European Tour days, but you know, at that point he did struggle with a putter, and you know, it was rare that you'd see an event where he was nailing these kind of mid-range, you know, 6, 8, 10 foot putts with regularity. But that changed, you know, and you could see he'd stepped up to the next level, when, you know, with the results he was getting, his PGA Tour win, his Open Championship win, of course. Yeah, I think it's temporary. I don't think there's anything to materially worry about there. It'll just a little bit of lack of form with a putter, and it will come back round again. But as you say, the ball striking in general wasn't too bad.
He's scrambling. He was number one in the field for scrambling.
Yeah.
He was 80% on scrambling. So, his game's there or thereabouts. It's just keeping an eye on the putter with Francesco and seeing if that starts to warm, getting on him. Kevin Na was a very worthy winner. That's 3 PGA Tour wins now for Kevin.
Yep.
And that was it was just composed, wasn't it? It got to the stage where I was almost switching on the European election results over and over the goal, because it was just so obvious that Kevin was going to win.
Must have been bad.
And Tony can't win, won't win was not really chasing him down a great deal. And it was just comfortable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All of his three PGA Tour victories have all been on pure bent grass.
Yeah. There was no real stress, was there? And, he kind of got himself into that position where he was 2, 3, 4 shots ahead, wasn't he? And
showed no signs of collapse, did he, really?
There was no wobble for him. There was no real charge from anyone else. I mean, early in the day, Brad Schnedeker had a decent round going. Not that I don't think he would have got close enough to it, but...
But he would have got a nice each-way place for us.
Yeah, potentially.
Until he started throwing double bogeys at the situation.
Yeah, I had him as part of one of my juicier... DraftKings teams as well, so when he was going well, that was pushing on nicely, but he couldn't keep that going either, could he, unfortunately.
When you see guys on a hot run, they usually keep it going to the end, don't they?
Well,
invariably, when you're on them, though, that often all of a sudden there's a double bogey around the corner.
Yeah.
He just threw two in for luck.
Yeah. On a Sunday, when you're off the pace, some of these players can maintain it for 18 holes, can't they? And backdoor that top five or top eight, or get you some decent DK points or whatever it is, just from a flying final round. But yeah, he couldn't quite keep it going, could he? Unfortunately,
I was looking for four key stats last week. Kevin Na ticked all four boxes. The only issue was that they were all four boxes were ticked from last season.
Yeah.
But as he said in his winners' interview, there's three or four courses on the tour that are short enough to know that that's where he can win. And that's, I suppose, what you've got to bear in mind, isn't it, with Kevin? Somewhere like a Harbour Town, a Colonial, a Summerlin, where length really isn't much of a plus point.
No. When it suits...
Very, very impressive.
Yeah, when it suits, he's a good player. And he takes a bit of stick, doesn't he? But, he's clearly well capable. As you say, three-time PGA Tour winner now, so you don't fluke three wins in a career.
He snuck into the world's top 50, I believe, which gets him an automatic spot. It was the cut-off last weekend for the Open.
Yeah.
Or one of the cut-offs. So Nas snuck in, I believe, which was an interesting concept. So, yeah, he's 52nd. So he was outside. That win drives him up to 31st. There were a couple of others that snuck in as well. Jimbo, he snuck up from 51 to 50 to get an invite to Royal Portrush. As did Andrew Putnam, who got that good finish as well.
Yeah, this will be on their minds, won't it? You know, they'll be acutely aware of where they're sitting on the world rankings coming into a big event or any kind of event, particularly with a cut-off looming. So, little bit of extra incentive to have a decent week, or to not take your foot off the gas at the end if you're in a position to find that position you need to get yourself into the top 50.
Where are you with Jordan? I think a lot of people were expecting him to make a Sunday charge and put Kevin under a lot of pressure, and that Kevin would collapse.
Yeah,
but it never happened.
He couldn't make a birdie on Sunday, could he? And, you know, from the sheer yardage of putts that he'd made up until that point in the week, you were expecting him to make a few red numbers, but it just didn't happen. It just didn't happen at all.
Did I see on the coverage that if he was going to have just a moderate performance on the greens on Sunday, he was going to set a new PGA Tour record for the amount of feet made in a golf tournament?
Oh, it was obscene, wasn't it? Particularly that first round, he was just nailing everything from everywhere, wasn't he? Just an incredible feat. And his strokes gain putting has been trending positively for a while now. And clearly that element of his game is back to where you'd expect it to be for a player like Jordan Spieth. You know, notwithstanding he didn't make anything on Sunday, but you know, that's in general, he's moving far faster forward in that respect. And the rest of his game comes round, he's going to be competitive again. He's not far off, I don't think.
65th for fairways, 35th for greens in regulation. He was 70th for proximity to hole. First in distance in putts made. He made 480 feet of putts. Now, it's interesting because he plays Muirfield this week. So this will be his last outing before the US Open. And as we know, with US Open winners, you want players that are finding confidence with the driver and who are very, very, you know, under control with their approach playing irons.
Yeah.
So if there is a massive step forward with Spieth on his tee to great green game this week, he has to be a factor at Pebble Beach at the US Open.
Does the Poana not put you off Pebble Beach?
Well, he's won there.
Well, yes, that's
he's got three of his PGA Tour wins are on Poana or bent grass mixed Poana green. So yeah. No, I don't really put me on.
It's always been his least favourite of surfaces. But see, for me, if the part of his game that's flying is the putter, and there's any reason that could be dampened by that particular course,
Oh yeah. No, I agree with what you're saying.
It's an interesting dilemma. I think he
would need to make a huge, huge step change this week at Muirfield Village in terms of his strokes gained off the tee, his strokes gained approach. If the putter falls away this week, who cares? Because we know it's there in the background. He would need to make a massive, massive, massive jump to get me interested. But, you know, US Opens tend to be won with a very, very good driver, a long driver, and this comes out in my US Open preview that we've got a link through to in the description box of the podcast. But I remember when GMAC won in 2010, I think he was in the top five for driving accuracy. He was in the top 10, or I think he was even in the top 10 for driving distance.
Yeah.
He was number one for greens in regulation. And if they get the conditions where they want them at the US Open, it isn't Mike Davis doing the setup this year, so we might actually get a half playable golf course.
Yeah.
But it will be thick rough. There will be lightning fast greens if they can get them. And as we know at Pebble, the greens are so small, you're going to need to have a scrambling and short game to win around there. But inevitably, Tata Green is likely to win it.
Yes.
And like you said, you know, you can't take a Jordan Spieth at the moment who's purely competitive on the basis of a unrealistically great putting performance week in, week out.
No, because you're best will in the world, you're not going to do that every single week.
If you're banging it 30 yards left or right on some of these holes at Pebble Beach, it's going to be treble bogey country.
Yeah.
Which puts me off Phil Mickelson, so...
Yeah, there's a few players with decent Pebble records that aren't quite hitting it off the tee at the moment. It's going to be an interesting one to try and unravel, actually.
As it is every week, Paul.
Mm. Yes.
You came reasonably close last week with Pablo, didn't you?
In Denmark? Yeah, in Denmark. Cracking event. I really enjoy that Danish event, to be fair.
I love the walkthrough through the beer tent. That was brilliant. You and I have got to go there. I can imagine standing there for a couple of hours, giving it high fives to all the players as you're in your 18th Heineken.
Yeah, I expect it gets more and more raucous as the day progresses, doesn't it? Looked like great fun. And you've got to applaud the European Tour and a lot of these little initiatives that they're picking up and trying to make the whole concept of golf more attractive, but clearly attracting more people to the course to watch the events, and more spectators equals more money equals more excitement and interest in the sport. So hats off to them. I think it's some really good stuff that they're doing in general over in the European Tour. But yeah, in terms of the event itself, the two that made it through to the weekend were Benjamin Hébert, who was in decent spot for the first round or two, and then slowly drifted away, and Pablo Larrazabal. And Pablo, he played in the worst of the wind on Thursday, so he was out in the afternoon when it was particularly nasty. He played when it was lashing down with rain on Friday morning, which he absolutely hates. And when I saw it was raining on Friday morning, my heart sunk, because I know that Pablo, if there's one thing that he can play in wind, he's fine, but when it's windy and rainy, he's just he just really struggles. And to be fair to him, he managed to get himself round on Friday morning, largely unscathed. Decent round on Saturday, and then made a decent charge of it on Sunday morning, and got himself into a share of the lead at the back of the front nine, 5 under through his first nine holes. And at that point, he had a chance. I know the the likes of Wiesberger and McIntyre still had a hole or two on him, and they were birdieable holes. But you know, you can do no more than put yourself into that position after nine holes. And I did have a bit of hope that he could push on and produce that, well, you know, what would have needed to have been a 61, 62 to really, really give himself a chance. But alas, it didn't happen on the back nine for him. But yeah, he managed to just about hang on to a full place for us with the eight places each way that were being paid by Boyles last week. And turned it into a profitable week altogether. Just a bit disappointing, as always, to get one who's in the mix, you know, relatively late on a Sunday and then fall away a little bit.
But it will come. It has to come.
C'est la vie. Bernd Wiesberger, I mean, we've talked about his performance. And we've talked about him on the pod.
We've mentioned him a couple of times in recent months, haven't we? Recent weeks. Bernd, yeah. I tipped him up a few weeks ago. And at an event which was, as you highlighted, a putters event, you would never, ever put Bernd Wiesberger up as someone that was going to top the putting average stats for the week.
No.
But that's what he did.
Yeah. And you look back through his recent performances and he's putting at 1.8, he's close to 1.9s. And, you know, I had a good look at him. I did have a good look at him because there were a few points that really correlated well with him. But, yeah, my assertion for this event was that it was you needed a hot putter. And that didn't look like Bernd Wiesberger. Yet he's come out, he's putted with an average of 1.60. He's been top for putts per GAR in the whole field. And he's won the golf tournament, despite that wobble on the 18th hole. And, you know, well done to him coming back from injury. We know he's a quality player. We've seen him win some decent events over the years. So, you know, it'll be a welcome return to form for him. And see how he pushes on from here going forward.
What was his problem? Why did he disappear?
There was an injury of some description. I forget exactly what it was. It was either a wrist or a back. I can't quite recall off the top of my head. But yeah, there was something that was niggling away. And yeah, clearly he's got himself back into decent fitness and back into the winner's circle as well. Tough on Robert McIntyre. That's the second time that he's finished runner-up over the last few weeks. And he looks like a decent... decent prospect.
He does, yeah. That's 2 second places on the trot, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he could quite conceivably have won both of those events. Things have gone slightly his way rather than the eventual winner. So
he's not scared, is he? No. He likes mixing it.
No, and he was 100 to 1 for that event last week. You know, clearly he hadn't... That second place finish at Hillside hadn't really resonated with the bookies. And punters alike, and it's been largely ignored again, yet it came very, very close to winning at 100 to 1. So, one to keep an eye on, I think, over the next few weeks.
We've got the Memorial Tournament over in the States this week, which is an invitational status event. It's Jack Nicklaus's tournament. It's at Jack's Place in Dublin, Ohio. It's his golf course, it's his design, he has complete control. And to be fair, it's always one of the best tournaments of the year, in my opinion. Always one that I look forward to massively. I think the coverage is always excellent. McIlroy, Woods, Rose, Thomas, Cantlay, Fowler, Kuchar, Spieth, Day, Finau, Matsuyama, Schofield, Scott, DeChambeau, the defending champion, Woodland. You know, it's a cracking field. Henrik Stenson in there. It's also got depth to it as well. I mean, there aren't many tournaments where you see the likes of Martin Laird and Russell Knox on Saturday when the field was announced. They were alternates.
Yep.
So it shows you the depth. They're in the field now for various dropouts, but they didn't automatically qualify.
No,
so it shows you that it is a decent field. Decent very, very strong field. You got it. I mean, Louis Oosthuizen's in there. Lefty Mickelson. Tyrrell Hatton. You know, some very good players. Kisner. It's interesting. Very, very interesting tournament. I always equate, in my mind, Memorial to the Cathedral of Ball Striking. It is ball striking, ball striking, ball striking around here. And there's a couple of things that I'm going to point out, which might not tally up with other views on the golf course. But for me, it's a golf course that gets harder the further down the hole you get. So actually, as a driving test, it's pretty simple. the fairways, I think, are 35, 36 yards wide, which are almost 10 yards wider than last week.
Yeah, there'll be a noticeable difference versus Colonial, that's for sure, when you see it on the TV.
But I think that's kind of okay. So you're going to get even the wayward drivers hitting 60, 65% of fairways, which they're not used to. But that's, that kind of is a leveller. But positioning here is critical, I think. Positioning. Because what tends to happen, it's a second shot golf course. And where the real difficulty here is in the green complexes. And they're typical Jack Nicklaus. They're bent grass mixed with poana. They're pretty quick if they can be. And there is a lot of tilt. There is a lot of uneven putting surfaces. So lots of swales. Lots of runoff areas around greens. And you have to be able to access the flatter part of the greens, you need a pinpoint laser approach game. And we review statistics each week, what we're looking for. Take the last 9 winners here. Tournament skill averages. Driving distance, 37th. So that just instantly tells you this isn't bomb and gouge.
Yeah.
Driving accuracy, 21st. Greens in reg, 11th. Proximity to hole, 12th. Scrambling, 11th. And putting average down near the 20th, 17th spot. So actually, greens in reg, proximity to hole and scrambling. That's what we're looking for here. And if you can find a guy that can hit it long and straight, like DeChambeau did last year, you really are... or DeChambeau did in the build-up. He wasn't that great off the tee as it goes in the end in terms of accuracy. He was actually in the 58th for greens for fairways hit. But even then, he's still hitting 62.5% of fairways.
Mm.
But what he was brilliant at was the... And in the build-up, he had a very good greens and regulation go. He was 9th for proximity to hole. So I'm looking for players this week who have got that kind of ball-striking mentality. Very strong ball-striking on the way in. Guys that are comfortable with their approach play. I think there's also something in here about players generally have been playing some nice all-round golf. So if you're seeing players towards the top of the scoring average stats on the PGA Tour, but haven't won recently, who have got a real desire to be getting a W on their resume, I don't think that's such a bad thing either. Because if you think about DeChambeau last year, he won his second PGA Tour victory here. It was 10 months after he'd won the John Deere Classic. But in the build-up, there'd been signs that he'd been, I think, fourth at Quail Hollow.
Yeah.
He'd finished third at the RBC Heritage. So, he was playing some decent golf and contending.
Yeah, he'd been showing some decent snippets of form, hadn't he? Which is never a bad thing for an all-round test like this, as you say.
But when you get such a good field pool, you wouldn't expect the champions list to read Bryson DeChambeau, Jason Duffner, William McGirt, David Lingmuth, would you?
No. There's been a few shocks in there, isn't there? Some real long odds winners over the years. So
50, 66s, McGirt 200s, David Lingmuth 500s. Good luck with that. But even Hideki Matsuyama in 2014, that was when Matsuyama was pretty much the new kid on the block, and that was a 66-1 winner.
Yeah. I vaguely remember you picking up Justin Rose there. It was 80-1, I think it was, way back in the day.
He'd finished 10th at Wentworth, the outing before just about coming last at Colonial. But that's the kind of thing I'm looking for.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing I'm looking for. Someone that's... You'd need a... ideally, you've got... Because even William McGirt, he'd finished in the top 8 or something at the RBC a few outings before he won here.
Yeah.
Jason Duffner had been contending. In 2017, I'd had Duffner going out in the final group at the RBC Heritage and he capitulated. Then he comes here... I think he was like the 50, wasn't he? He was leading by 4 or 5 at halfway, fell apart on the Saturday, was 4 shots behind starting Sunday, and then came back to take over from Ricky Fowler, who, as we know, isn't the best leader in the world.
Yeah, I remember that one.
So swing, but what would you say about Jason Duffner when he's on form? Fairways and green man, isn't he? And he's got a great approach play.
Yeah, absolutely. Very stoical, very focused on that, you know, that part of his game, and it's just churn out fairways and greens and move on to the next hole.
Anything I've missed from a course or what you're looking for perspective in your view?
No, I think it's of the courses and the events. It is relatively straightforward in terms of the type of player that you know theoretically are looking for. Whether that actually translates to the eventual winner or not, as we know, can throw some really odd results up. I mean, Lingworth, as you said, if you're trying to work out how to have picked him and put him in your team, aside from a crystal ball, you've done incredibly well to find something in him. But no, I think ball striking's the key angle of attack this week.
The other thing with the PGA Tour of late, of course, is that the winning prices have been long anyway, haven't they?
Mm.
You know, wasn't I think last week the average price winner at Colonial was something around the late 20-1 mark, 30-1 in the last 9 years.
Yeah.
There'd been one winner at 100-1 who'd been Boo Weekly. And then you've got a nice, juicy 66-1 winner in Kevin Na landing. So, you know, quality player who's actually what you think is slightly overpriced, I don't think that's a bad shout this week either. Mm. I've got five that I'm going for.
Yep.
This guy at the top, he's playing some outstanding golf. Seventh at the WGC HSBC in China. Second in Las Vegas end of last year. Ninth in the Desert Classic in January. Sixth at the World Golf Championship in Mexico. Ninth at the Masters. Third at the Harbour Town. Third at the PGA Championship. So now he's contending and hanging around in majors. He's only ever once on the PGA Tour. His words after finishing third at Bethpage Black were, "I feel like every week I show up extremely prepared and extremely ready to play well, and I have been. I had a lot of nice finishes this year, and I'm looking to get some W's." He was leading here in the back nine last year. Looked like he was going to win, which I was praying that he didn't because I was on DeChambeau, and then he just fell away. A couple of unwanted bogeys towards the end. Mm. Missed the playoff by a spot. But if you're thinking of someone that's in great nick from tee to green, got a good scrambling game, and he ranks, I mean, I was pretty shocked by this myself. He ranks in my 8-week putting average tracker number one in the field, and I've never seen that. Step forward, Patrick Cantlay.
Yep. He's very, very close, isn't he?
He was 22-1 when we were writing the previews yesterday afternoon. Yeah, and just as we were about to press the button, you said to me, "Oh no, Cantley's price has gone." So yeah, I managed to get 18s, which actually this morning is as low as 14s in places.
He's going to continue to be back because I think logically he makes a lot of sense every angle that you look at him from. So he's going to tick a lot of punters' boxes this week, I think.
We have had obvious winners here since 2010. Matt Kuchar was second at Colonial before he won here. It does happen. It hasn't happened for a while. So if you're looking for a really obvious winner, Steve Stricker was 12th and 13th before he won here. Hideki Matsuyama had been the 54-hole leader the week before Colonial. Finished 10th, won this. Mm. So, you know, there are obvious form lines in there, but they're just a little bit hidden over the last few years. But yes, I think Cantlay's a very obvious pick. The other guy I just couldn't ignore at the top of the market was Matt Kuchar. 10th, 5th, 8th, 2nd, 1st, 4th and 4th. That's one win, four top fives and two top 10 finishes in 13 appearances.
Yeah, and he's being hyper-consistent late as well, isn't he? So you couple it all together, there's... You know how Matt Kuchar wins his events. He just progresses through these, you know, high finishes and then eventually drops over the line at a ridiculously short price. But you know it's coming as well. That's the problem.
Well, of those guys at the very top of the market, Rory, Tiger, Justin Rose, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, I'm not seeing a name there of five big names who are absolutely bulletproof going into this.
No.
You can all put a question mark or a couple of question marks against a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what, you know, they're good players, clearly. Spieth, Jason Day. But of those guys that were towards the top of the market, with guy, you know, and you're looking at their stats, you're looking at their ball striking, you're looking at their greens in regulation, you're looking at the amount of appearances that they've had recently, as opposed to not playing recently. Don't forget, Tiger's played once since Augusta. Justin Thomas hasn't played at all since Augusta with his wrist injury.
Yeah,
so struggling. I wouldn't be backing Justin Thomas in this when he hasn't played for almost 2 months and he's 18-1.
Mm-hmm.
So logically, I've gone for the two logical guys. You could make a case for Tony Finau, but as podcast listeners will know, Tony Finau's in my won't back bucket. I just won't back him these days. There were a couple who came kind of close, Matsuyama, but we've been saying that for a long while.
He's still not quite right himself, is he? As you say, when you look down the list, you can find a reason to oppose all of them, really, can't you? Some of them are more spurious than others, but
Hideki Matsuyama at Bethpage Black, even though he was, you know, kind of contending and in the last few groups, he was in top. He was 60th for greens in regulation. Yeah, if you take the whole, that's not Hideki, is it? If Hideki was third for GIR, it just doesn't fit. The other one who Barry will clearly love this week, Barry's not on the pod, but I guarantee he's backing him, will be Gary Woodland, who is your archetype, hits lots of fairways, hits thousands of greens, can hit it close. It's just whether the putter works for Gary, and it's always that big if.
Yeah.
So he was another one towards the top that I did take a good close look at. He's also got a couple of top four finishes here. So that's why I went Cantley and Kuchar, bleeding obvious, concrete over the back of the head kind of bets. Lower down, I almost jumped over this particular individual because I've mentioned him recently and he's done absolutely bugger all. But he kind of hit me between both eyes last week. And it's just how well this guy's playing. I don't think people give him credit. Because at the end of the day, this gentleman is 49 years of age. He's crept back into the world top 50. That's pretty amazing stuff. Sixth in Mexico at El Chameleon before Christmas. Ninth at PGA National. Second at Sawgrass. 13th last week at Colonial. He picks courses he knows where length isn't a real problem. Or, you know, you don't have to be hugely long to be competitive. And he just plays so well. He is eighth on the whole PGA Tour in scoring average. I mean, that's phenomenal at 49 years of age.
Yeah, he's been having a decent season. I think missing out on the Masters this year will have hurt him a little bit as well. So, he'll be keen to, well, as you say, get into the top 50 for a start to get himself into these big events.
He's got into the Open, as we said. He's snuck into the Open. 15th for greens in reg, 13th strokes gained approach, 2nd in proximity to hole across the whole tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whether he can putt. And he putted quite nicely at Colonial. I saw a couple of horseshoes towards the start of last on Sunday's round where literally the ball was in the hole and then just managed to jump out. And I think that actually got to him. But actually, Jim Furyk is playing some really nice golf at the moment. And if people are sitting there going, he's not long enough, Kyle Stanley, 12 months ago, averaged 278 yards off the tee and made the playoff here.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a bombing golf course.
Now, as you said in the preamble, if you're,
it's the kind of, sorry, I shouldn't say that. It's the kind of golf course where bombers can be competitive, but so can Jim Furyk if he's doing exactly how he plays to a very high standard.
Yeah.
It's an open, it's like TPC Sawgrass, isn't it? You can't actually name who's going to win it in terms of their distance or the fact that they play a certain style. But if they play well enough on the week and they can get the ball close on their approaches, it doesn't matter who, what type of game you've got a chance of winning around here.
And given how well he was striking the ball at the Charles Schwab last week, first for driving accuracy, fourth for greens and regulation, Jim, you know his long game's in decent enough strength to go well, I think.
I just want to put a shout out there for Paddy Power and Betfair Sportsbook this week. They are 8 places each way of 50 odds at the Memorial this week, which is joint best, so eight places each way. But across my predictor model yesterday, they were best or equal best price on six of the ten.
Yeah, it's a good game.
That is, yeah. So you're getting brilliant odds, and you're getting the most amount of each way places with Betfair Sportsbook and Paddy Power this week. Mm. So if you haven't got one of their accounts, I would point listeners to get to our website and potentially open up a new book with these guys, because, you know, as we know, and as we've got an analysis piece on our website which tracks each way places week in, week out, Paddy Power are number one across the whole of 2019 for each way places given. Mm. And as I just said, they're not cutting their odds in half either when they do that.
No, it's a decent combination at the moment, which should be applauded, as you say.
Well, and also in the Belgian knockout this week, I've just finished doing the golf betting show on that, and you've highlighted this in your betting preview. They're paying out on all quarter finalists in the actual overall tournament market.
Yep, indeed. It's been a trend in that event, or these kind of pseudo match play events that have been popping up on the European Tour for a while now. A few of the bookies have been going down that route, which again, yeah, gives you more of an option. So yeah, we'll cover that in a sec, but definitely one to consider this week.
Two more for me. A guy that won on Ben Poana Greens last year at Montreux, where they play the Reno Tahoe. The week before that, he'd finished eighth at Glen Abbey, which again, bent grass mixed with Poana Greens. Both of those golf courses are Jack Nicklaus designs. Mm. He's also the sort that when he hits a lot of greens in the putter fires, he can just string together two consecutive tournaments or three consecutive tournaments of good finishes.
Yeah.
Andrew Putnam. I've got a point each way. I've got 125, seven place each way, 50 odds with Betfred Sportsbook. Mm. Again, the kind of player that might just pop up in this and shock. But in a world where you've got such great players this week, he's 125 to 1, where I think in a normal standard golf tournament this week, you'd probably be getting 50s, maybe 60 to 1.
Yeah, particularly, you know, given how well he's been playing. You know, often these players can take that form forward for another week and maintain it and, you know, place or better the following week. And everyone's slapping their foreheads afterwards saying that, you know, his form was so bleeding obvious. But
oh, yeah, but he can't win in them. But this is it. Oh, you know, William McGirt, he's never going to beat a field that contains seven of the top 11 in the world, blah, 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 wins.
Yeah.
That tends to happen here. It can happen. Yeah. I was about to send over my preview to you, as you know, Paul, and that was it. And then as I was literally pressing send to publish, I thought to myself, I cannot not include this chap in my team this week. So I went for my favourite and your favourite, Matt Every. Half a point each way, 175 to 1 I got yesterday, seven places each way, 50 odds with our friends at Betfred.
Yeah.
And you know, his form, third in New Orleans, second at Trinity Forest, 17th last week at Colonial. It's amazing how he's rebuilt his game this season.
He's been playing well, and he's starting to putt well again, which is noticeable from seeing how he's progressing through each of his rounds each week. I kept a close eye on him last week because I had him, again, part of a few of my DraftKings teams, and he played some tidy stuff.
Who would you say on the whole of the PGA Tour is the best putter in terms of putting average?
Well, right now, is it Matt Every right now, is it?
Matt Every.
Really? Really?
On the PGA, you know, statistic, the official statistic, he's number one for putting average, above Jordan Spieth and above Justin Rose, who's been putting well recently. Mm.
No, I like Matt Every this week. I'm on Matt as well. I've got my normal first round leader losing punt on him.
I was going to get rid of him because for me he hasn't been hitting enough fairways recently. Mm. But actually, it's wider here. And if you look at his performance a few weeks ago when he finished second behind Sung Kang over in at Texas at Trinity Forest. Yeah, you go, oh, God, he was 53rd for driving accuracy. Yeah, but he almost hit 80% of fairways. And I could see the same kind of thing this week, where actually he might be ranked in like the low 50s for driving accuracy. But that's still going to make him mid-60s to high 60s for actual fairways he's standing on.
Yep.
And recently, 28th and 14th for greens in regulation in his last two outings. And as you said, first for putting average at the Byron Nelson, and he was seventh last week for putting average at the Charles Schwab Challenge. His putting is absolutely top draw at the moment. Sixth here on course debut back in 2013. So he can play the course when he's in great nick. And actually, his two PGA Tour victories have been at another golf course, which for me are a kind of ball striker's alley, Bay Hill.
Oh, yeah.
So he can win.
Yep, I know there's some correlation there, without any shadow of a doubt. I think he's a good as good punt at the price. I think he's a very good punt this week. As I say, I've done him first round leader as well, which I tend to do most weeks. So
that goes without
saying. It's got to come good at 1 week, Steve. It's got to.
It could be this week, mate. I've got he really grinded that out last week. You know, that for me wasn't a Matt Every kind of tournament. It's blowing 25 mile an hour for three of the 4 days. It isn't a birdie fest. It isn't anything in double digits that wins. I know that Niall got the 13 under. He was the only player in double digits. Yep. But he actually dug in there, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And he was there or thereabouts on the leaderboard the whole week. That says to me a player that's actually playing with a level of confidence and desire. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised to see him just pop up this week at all.
No, I think at the price he's you've got to take a chance on him. I think.
Who do you fancy at a price this week?
Well, I'd say I've backed Every. The other two that I've backed are Kyle Stanley, who absolutely loves it here. He's third in 2013, sixth in 2017. As you said earlier, he lost his playoff last year to Bryson. I think what's interesting when you look at those performances, particularly over the last couple of years, is his putting here has been particularly strong.
Yeah, which is his weakness.
Yeah, it is, yeah. You know, he's a great ball striker. We know how good a ball striker he is, and generally it's the putter that really lets him down and prevents him from contending and winning more tournaments than perhaps he should. But he's been second and fifth for putting average the last two times that he's played here. He was sixth for putting average at Quail Hollow in his penultimate start. He finished eighth overall, I think, that week. Missed cut at Bethpage, but I'm not overly concerned with that. As you say, he's not the longest of the team. Bethpage was a brutal track. Bringing back to a track that he clearly gets on with, at 80 to 1, I thought he was worth taking a chance on, Kyle Stanley.
Yeah.
And the other one that I've kept faith in after backing him last week was Jason Duffner, who won here back in 2017, as you described a few minutes ago, with that kind of decent position, collapse, then recovery on the Sunday to take the title. 125 to 1. And actually, I got to say, I backed him last week, and he was in a decent spot after two rounds. He shot 67, 68 to start. He was fifth going into the weekend. He led going into the Sunday at Quail Hollow a few weeks back as well. So there's something percolating with Duffner. And I think, again, on a track that he really gets on with and suits his game, I thought he was worth taking on again at 125 to 1. Stick with him. I know what will happen if I don't take him and leave him out this week. I expect he'll feature. So I thought he was a fair price to take another chance on this week.
Big price, that, for Duffner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of big prices as you go down the list. As you say, it's so top-heavy, this tournament. You know, there's so many players in there you could make a, you know, 80, 90% of a case for. You know, it's pushing some of those players, those named players, down to prices that you wouldn't expect. You know, a Jordan Spieth at 22s, a Jason Day at 22s. Tony Finau, who's, you know, close last week, 25 to 1 in places. So the impact of that is that these kind of mid to longer price players, there are some really juicy prices out there. And you've seen it, you know, you've described it already. There's scope for this tournament to produce three-figure winners. It does happen.
That 125-1 on Duffner is the wrong price. Because he's as short as 80-1 with a couple of other bookmakers. That's the kind of price he should be.
Yep.
And he is showing. He is percolating quite nicely. I'll tell you another player I think from a DraftKings perspective could be a very, very worthy addition to your team. I know this is more your area of expertise, but I think that Talor Gooch.
Yep, yep. I know he was high up on
He fired in a closing 67 on Sunday. And you look at him statistically for what you want here, he's pretty perfect.
Yep.
Never played the course. And that's what put me off from a betting perspective. But he seemed to... He must have had some form of injury, because don't forget he was in the top two or three, wasn't he, at Torrey Pines. He had a run of a couple of decent, very strong finishes in California in January, and that's secured his playing privileges for next year. He's got no worries, no pressures on him.
Yeah.
And he played, I think it was the Knoxville Open a few weeks ago on the web.com, just to kind of start getting some oil on the wheels. And then he played nicely last week, top 30 at Colonial, won his first PGA Tour start for a while. I think Gooch could, his game will suit this place down to the ground. Mm. And he's going to be a cheap price on DraftKings.
Yeah, yeah. I was just having a quick look to see exactly what his price was, actually.
Where's
six,
he at?
6'9", so, so yeah. I noticed he popped up on the predictor output, I think, as well. So, yeah, there's a few that caught my eye from a DraftKings perspective. Matt Jones, 6'5". I think that Johnny Vegas is close. Whether it's this week, I think I actually prefer him next week, I think, Vegas. But he caught my eye as well.
What, on a course where he's... In fact, no, scrap that. They're not playing Glen Abbey next week in Canada.
Right, okay.
They switched it back to the golf course that Scott Piercy won on a few years ago.
Right, okay.
Royal Montreal, it might be.
Materially different, is it? This is one for next week, this discussion, isn't it?
It is one for next week. I think it's your typical Canadian classical tree-lined golf course. So Vegas is one that you'd have in mind for that, yeah.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. But yeah, Joaquin Neiman's a late entry into the field. He did well last year. He's sitting at 7-3 yeah. on DraftKings. So there were no odds for him just before we came on air to record this today. So it'll be interesting to see what price he does pop up at. But it would suggest it's...
150, I'm saying.
150's come up in the meantime. So yeah, that's...
It's more 100 to 125 is readily available and wacky. But we said last week, didn't we? Bentgrass greens, it will start to come back.
Yeah.
His play will start to come back because he'll actually start making some putts.
Yeah,
he was reasonable last week. He was reasonable last week in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, clearly we know that he's a talented player, and when the courses come back round that suit his game a little bit more, then I wouldn't be surprised to see him start to feature.
Just to clarify, the Canadian Open next week is Hamilton Golf and Country Club. It isn't Royal Montreal. But yes, it's not Glen Abbey where they played it for the last right, four okay. or 5 years. Right, I think that is that us for the Memorial?
I think so, yeah.
Let's talk Belgian let's talk Belgian knockout.
Yeah, the Belgian knockout, which is the...
Good, it was a good tournament last year. I enjoyed it. But then I suppose you did pick up the winner, which helped.
Yeah, yeah. It's, Adrian Ategui got the job done for us last year. And it's one of these innovative events from the European Tour that's catching on, and they're trying different things. And again, they tend to be well received, don't they? I don't think any of these alternative format or ideas that they've tried, people have turned around and said, you know, that didn't work. Waste of time, that was. I think these, you know, they're well supported, they're well hosted this year. Again, it's Thomas Peters who's hosting it with his family, who all have different roles and jobs as part of the tournament. And yes, it's second year of this particular event, the Belgian Knockout. Back to Rinkeven International Golf Club in Antwerp, in Belgium. And it's, I guess the best way to describe it is a hybrid stroke play Got to be careful not to use the word match play here, because they're not actually playing match play. They're playing nine whole matches that are based on stroke play. But let me take you through the format before I tie myself completely in knots. The players play two rounds of 18 whole stroke play as per normal for the first two rounds. So for Thursday, Friday, nothing much changes over a normal event. The cut is made at 64, and if there are people tied for 64th place, they'll perform a, or they'll be in part of a playoff to see who progresses through to the weekend. So once we got down to 64, going into Saturday morning, the players there are then split into two lots of 32. The players who are the top of the leaderboard are seeded all the way down to the players who've clearly finished 64th. And then 32 of the players go off and play the front nine, 32 of the players go and play the back nine in head-to-head nine-hole matches. So they're based on stroke play. So their cumulative stroke play score over those nine holes is what counts. And the winner at the end of those nine-hole matches then progresses through to the next round. If there's a tie at the end of it, again, they play off to see who progresses through to the next round.
Can I ask you a question? Because this jumped into my mind when I was reading through this, when I was recording the Golf Betting Show earlier. Mm. So you've got half the field playing the front nine and then half the field playing the back nine. Is that correct?
Yep.
But they don't change all during Saturday. They only play that one side of the golf course.
As I understand it, yeah.
Wow.
Just to keep it
I can see why they're doing it, yeah.
Yeah, just for logistic reasons, I guess they need to keep it as simplistic as possible. But yeah,
I suppose there's no real disadvantage or advantage, because at the end of the day, when you actually get to the Sunday, and are you playing still nine holes on the Sunday as well?
Yeah, there's still nine-hole matches. So there are some subtle differences between the nines as well, because it's a par 71. There's a par 5 on both sides, but there is a reachable par 4 on the back nine. So depending how it falls in terms of where you are as a player, you could, you know, a longer player, for instance, could be better suited to the back nine, and it could work to their benefit that way. But if you're going to try and second guess as to whether a player is going to get through, and then where they're going to finish on the leaderboard to dictate where they're going to play on the Saturday, Sunday, yeah, good luck with that. So I think you just got to assume your players got to firstly get through to the weekend, and from there, then they've got these three rounds of nine-hole matches on Saturday. If you get through that, then you've got, again, three rounds of nine-hole matches on Sunday. So you've got the quarterfinal, semis, and the final on Sunday. Now, in terms of betting, it is interesting because you alluded to it earlier. Generally, with these match play events, most of the bookies historically have gone four places each way, quarter the odds on the semi-finalist. So you'd need to get a player through to the semis to get an each-way return at a quarter the odds. A few of the bookies this week, namely Betfair, Paddy Power, Ball Sports and Sporting Bet, have each gone each way top eight, a fifth of the odds. So if your player gets through to the quarterfinals, so essentially if your player makes it through to Sunday, then you're getting an each-way return at a fifth of the odds. So that's if you bet the outright market. The alternative is to bet the 36-hole leader market. So that's where the stroke play in its ordinary sense will finish. So you can bet who will be leading as they go into the weekend. And again, similar to the way that the World Super 6 sets up, this offers an alternative way to take the matches out of the equation, which, you know, you could get a player who finishes top of the leaderboard after 36 holes and gets knocked out in the first round of the matches. If you've only backed him outright, you'd be pretty peeved to have achieved that. Equally, your player may scrape through in a playoff into 64th place and then go on to win the whole tournament. And in that respect, then you'd be pretty happy. So there are different ways to play this, of course. What I did last year, and I've done the same when I go through my final selections in a second, I've split my stake equally between both markets. So the outright market and the 36-hole leader market, and just backed the player that I found, or the three players that I fancy, in both markets for equal stakes. Right. So you've effectively got a chance then to get both the 36-hole winner and the outright winner, should someone do that. And of course, if one of your players is languishing in 64th place going into the weekend, they still have a chance of winning the overall tournament if they can progress through the matches. So I like that approach. It does mean that you're relatively restricted on how many players you're going to back, because you don't want to. I don't think you should be doubling your stake this week to cover off five or six players in both markets. I think that would be a little excessive in a format that is a little bit quirky. But other than that, I think it's a bit of fun to see if your players can progress through, and then see how they fare in the matches on Sunday or Saturday and Sunday. Going back to the actual course itself, as I say, we only played it last year, so we've only got 1 year's worth of data to go on. But it is a partially tree-lined, par 71, sub 7,000 yards, 6,924. And as I said a second ago, there's only a couple of par fives on it. So it doesn't set itself up massively as a bomber's track. It tends to be players who are quite neat and tidy from tee to green. So if you look at the player who finished top of the 36-hole leader market last year, Jorge Campillo at 8-under, he at the time, after 36 holes, was first for driving accuracy, fifth for greens in regulation. Benjamin Hebert, who finished runner-up to Adrian Ntayi in the match play, again, after those 36 holes where his stats were recorded, he was sitting fifth for accuracy, first for greens in regulation. So both of those players were particularly strong from tee to green. Now, if you look at Ntayi's stats, his stats for the week were far worse than those two, but he played particularly well over the weekend from tee to green and clearly hold enough putts to win the matches. So again, you've got to take the stats with a pinch of salt, I think. But for me, I think how a player performs with his greens in regulation, how he approaches his second shot and in from there, bogey minimisation, making birdies at the right time in the matches, I think there's a number of ways to look at this.
Right.
The greens here, the Poana based, I've seen them quoted as Poana, and they are Poana greens. However, each year they deliberately overseed them with bent grass to try and make them as close to bent grass as possible.
Yeah, because Poana's awful in the summer, isn't it? It's difficult for it to survive.
I've seen it quoted with Brent, and I think over the course of the year, each year the power grows back through, and they have to go through this cycle each year. But they attempt to get it to about 80% bent grass by the time they play the tournament. So I've classed it predominantly as bent, but there clearly is a little bit of Poana in there. That's the way it will play effectively. I guess the whole of this makes for an interesting betting market, because you've got the two different ways to attack the event in terms of whether you go for the outright market or the 36-hole leader. From an outright perspective, and it's a bit odd from an event that we normally look at, the favourite, Thomas Peters, starts at 22-1. So often we look at any event nowadays, even on the European Tour, and the favourite will be 8, 9, 10-1.
Single digits, yeah.
Very close to single digit. Even Thomas Peters, who tends to be the perennial favourite when we come into any of these events on the European Tour, tends to be that kind of price. Yep. So 22-1 tells you a story. And from there, Thomas Dietrich, 30-1 in places. Bernd Wiesberger, last week's winner, 33-1. Adrian Ntayi, last year's winner, 33-1. Then you're into 40-1 for the rest of the field. So it quickly gets to a decent scenario where you're getting some decent prices on players from the outright market. Right. And the 36-hole leader market's not dissimilar either. So I don't think you can look at this and disregard players simply because they're far too short. Because I don't think there are players who are far too short. I think you've just got to take a view on the players that you fancy to go well here and decide how you're going to play it from an outright and a 36-hole leader perspective. I've gone with three.
And you've done this in the past. You just combine the two kinds of bets, don't you?
Yeah, this is the way I played it last year, and this is the way I played the Super 6 as well. And it does give you two bites of the cherry, effectively, and two chances to get through. Of course, if all of your three players missed the cut, then you've got nothing going into the weekend. But you know, let's hope that we get a slightly more positive result than that. The first one I've gone for is Chris Paisley. One thing I noted from the likes of Campillo and from Ategi is their incoming form last year was particularly consistent. And if you look at Paisley, 14 cuts from his last 16 made. It's particularly consistent form. He was 8th in the Web.com Tour Championship last year. Just missed out on his PGA Tour card, actually.
Yeah.
9th at the Ned Bank, 9th in Oman. I'm dying it. 4th last week.
Do it quietly.
Yeah. 4th last week. Closed with a 65, which was the joint best of the day with SSP Chowra Asia. And he opened with a 68 last week as well. Just 2 off the lead after day one. So some good stuff there. Dear me. He was 12 under for the par fours as well last week, which I think is a key aspect to this. You know, in a track where there are only a couple of par fives, if you're playing well and scoring well on the par fours, then that's not a bad angle to look at. And with Paisley, I regard him as a putter. That's really his key strength.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when I see him hitting greens in regulation, 72.2% last week, he was top 10 for greens in regulation. That's a green light for me to get involved, because we know he's a good player when he's on form. We know he can hold form as well. So he finished 5th at the Paul Lurie match play in 2017 and then 3rd the week or his next start at the Maiden Denmark. He won the South African Open last year, and then he was 5th in Abu Dhabi and 5th in Dubai the next 2 weeks after that as well.
To win the South African Open, that's a high-profile golf tournament around Glendower. And that again is your typical South African tree line, bent grass dominated affair, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Although Glendower's a long old golf course, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's
at altitude.
It's at altitude as well. I think when I equated Glendower, I looked at it as around about a 6'9", so this is
really
okay. I think it measures 7'5", maybe close to 7'6", but you've got to allow 10% or so at Glendower.
But the kind of golf course where even the short hitters aren't—they're not coming in with long irons, they're coming in with shorter irons.
And as you say, bent grass greens, he dominated that week in terms of putting. 1.52 putts per greens regulation he got that week in Glendower on his way to victory. There's a lot of similarities there, and I think his incoming form kind of suits that as well. And his putter again has been warming up over the last few weeks. 1.73 of the Hassan Dur, and 1.69 last week. And I think a player that's combining a good putting ability, full stop, alongside some decent approach plays, you know, it's a player to be feared.
Paisley.
Yeah, absolutely. 9th at the Paul Lurie in 2016, the match play event that was held there. 5th in 2017. Narrowly lost out to Alejandro Canizares in the what would have been the round of 16 to go. Oh no, it's the quarterfinals to go.
Quarterfinals, I made it. Yeah,
yeah, to go into the semis. And again, we're not talking pure match play here. So again, you have to take any match play performances with a pinch of salt. Although it is, you know, one on one, man on man. Matches. So there's got to be some correlation, even though you can't compare it directly, I guess. But he did quote after that performance at the Paul Lurie in 2017 that he finds it easy to get into a positive mindset when he's playing match play. And I think, again, this is the kind of scenario where they're playing 9 holes. They can, you know, they look into the whites of each other's eyes and they're competing against each other. I can see that. You know, the scoring might be based on stroke play, but they've still got to outperform their opponent over those 9 holes. And I think you add it all together, there's a lot to like with Paisley this week. 40-1 I took him outright with 8 places, and 40-1 also in the 36 hole leader market. 2 more I've backed. I could see no reason whatsoever not to back Adrian Ategi. And I know backing the defending champion has its own challenges, but this will be the first time that he has actually defended. He's won the Paul Lurie match play in 2017, but didn't get a chance to defend it because it dropped off the schedule. He won this clearly last year, so this will be his first time. It'll be interesting to see how he performs, but given that he's won that Paul Lurie, he's won this hybrid format, he very nearly won the Super 6 earlier this year. Again, we backed him for that, and he got all the way through to the final. And up until the final, he looked every part the winner. He was playing the best golf of all the players there. He looked assured, and it looked like it was just going to be a procession to the to picking up the trophy. And then he ran into Ryan Fox in the final there, and over that short six-hole format, he couldn't compete. He went down quickly, and he couldn't recover. But I think there's a lot to like with Ategi, given that he obviously likes the format. He scraped through on the number last week in Denmark, so he only just made the cut. But he's improved massively over the weekend, and only two players in the field, and that was the top two, Wiesberger and McIntyre, actually outperformed him, outscored him over the weekend. That included him bogeying the final hole as well. So I think he found a little bit of form last year or last week. And given that those two wins that he's that we talked about already on the European Tour both came off decent performances the event before, I think taking that little bit of momentum into this week could be positive for him as well.
Okay.
Other than that, I mean, he missed the cut at Hillside. He narrowly missed the cut at the USPGA Championship. So I think the reason...
Again,
there's not much to worry about. But before that, 10th in India, 25th in Morocco. Back end of last year, 3rd in Turkey, 4th in Dubai at the Earth Course. You know, there's some decent form in decent fields there. And I think combine a little bit of a flash of form at the back end of last week and his liking of this format of golf, I think that's I think he'd go particularly well this week. The final one I've gone for is Alejandro Canizares, who again showed a bit of form last week. He's 80-1 in the outright market, 8 places, and 90-1. I took him 36-hole leader. He's another one of these guys who's been working with Robert Rock and Robert Rock's team on his swing and making some subtle changes. And another player who's been working with Rock is Matt Wallace, and we've seen what good that's done Matt Wallace over the last few months and the period of time that he's been working with Rock. He's really stepped up to the next level, and I think Canizares is starting to see the output of those changes now. We saw him after some poor form. We saw him lead, close to the lead in Oman after day one. He was fourth there after day one, second after day one in Morocco. 7th going into the weekend before falling away. He was leader last week in Denmark after the first day, 2nd going into the weekend, finished 9th overall.
He went completely off the grid, didn't he?
He did.
He clearly had some huge problems with elements of his game, and now, you have seen it just percolating on leaderboards, since we moved into the spring and early summer.
Yeah.
So he's moving forward in his game.
Yeah, he is. And I think it's interesting that he's gradually getting more consistent over the length of the entire tournament. So from that Oman effort where he did start well and then missed the cut the second day, I think he shot 83 the second day and missed the cut. Morocco, where he was 7th going into the weekend and finished kind of 40th or thereabouts. And then the last week, 1st, 2nd going into the weekend and then still finishing the top 10. So there's some consistency building into his game. And just reading what he's tweeting and what he's saying on Twitter, he seems to be very pleased with how things are progressing as well. He became a father mid-February, so clearly home life's happy, settled, back into the swing of playing golf now, and swapping golf clubs or nappies for golf clubs over the last few weeks, so back to what he does best. And again, if you look at his Paul Laurier match play form, 17th there on debut, 5th year after, 4th, so made it through to the semi-finals on his last start in 2017. I particularly like him for the 36-hole leader market, I must say, because the way that he's been trending, where he's been starting tournaments well and then, gradually improving over those three tournaments we talked about, but not actually winning the event in terms of a stroke play tournament.
Yeah,
I think
he
could be very close to the lead after
just freewheeling it Thursday, Friday before it gets tricky mentally.
Indeed. And then, but with some decent match play form from the Paul Laurie, perhaps he'll take to this format as well when they.
And his home course is Valderrama, so yeah, I mean that equates very nicely to round here, claustrophobic tree lined, yeah.
Yeah, tree lined, bent grass. You know, there's some correlation there to get your teeth into as well. So yes, those are the three that I picked out and fancy. Again, you could make a case for more quite readily, but I think in this format, and if you are backing, splitting the stake and backing them across both markets as I have, then I think you need to be quite restrictive as to how many players that you're putting up this week. But that's the way I'm playing it anyway. Any catch your eye, Steve?
No, I'll bow to your expertise this week. I was deep into the memorial. I haven't had any chance to look at it whatsoever. Mm. But yes, I can follow your logic. I also think that if you can find a putter, a natural putter that's got the habit of hitting greens as they arrive at a match play or at that kind of face-to-face, head-to-head type battle, that's a dangerous concoction, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I remember Brett Rumford, he won that first... I know it was his home course in Carinyup, down in Perth. Mm. But, you know, you look at a guy that's pretty much a natural-born putter. If you can hit that guy that's actually comfortable tee to green and then finding lots of chances to convert, they're very, very dangerous in this kind of format.
They are. And if you look at Rumford that week, he led after the stroke play element after 54 holes, as it is in Perth, and then went on to win the overall thing as well. So had you have played it the way that I've played it this week, then you'd have ended up with two outright winners for that.
Absolutely.
So that's the plan for this week, fingers crossed.
And I think in Peters and Dietry, the two Belgians who clearly won the World Cup before Christmas, you're going to have two guys there under pressure at their home event, which they're not used to. They're not used to play.
No. And Peters is part of the setup this week as well. So there'll be responsibilities for him to get his teeth into for the week as well, which will detract from his preparation. So he's a fiery character at the best of times, isn't he, Peters? So, you know, he's always apt to blow up every now and again. And if he has a bad nine holes on Sunday or Saturday, then that's him out of the tournament.
Brilliant. Thank you. I think a really strong take out this week as well with Betfair and Sportsbook. Sorry, what am I talking about? Betfair, Sportsbook and Paddy Power in terms of they're offering the eight places both on your tournament, which is a fantastic promotion, also on the Memorial. And that eight places each way on the PGA Tour is something they regularly do anyway on full field events. So that's well worth recognising. Paul, I appreciate your time this week. It's been very enjoyable. Let's hope for some decent performances from our players this week.
Yeah,
so it's a week of golf I always look forward to. I always love Memorial.
Yeah, some good golf to be viewed over the weekend.
What have you got next week?
It's that Golf Super 6 malarkey, the weekend event. So
you won't be partaking?
That'll be a blank week for me, so we'll just be focusing on the Canadian Open next week.
RBC Canadian Open, yes, absolutely. So,
and our US Open preview, or pre-event preview at some point at the back end of next week.
Yeah, we'll be recording that next week. Paul, thank you.
Yeah, best of luck.
Thanks to the listeners, as ever, and we will be back again next week. If you want to follow Paul and myself, I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting on Twitter. Thank you, and we'll see you again very soon. Goodbye.